Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe, and we are sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. I'm your host, Neil Reynolds, joined as ever by my co-host, my partner in crime, Jeff Rimebold. And Jeff, let's start first of all with a thank you to our listeners, because we are at record numbers now with the Inside the Huddle podcast. And I know we talk about it all the time, but it is genuinely appreciated, isn't it?
No question. Yeah, you know, that when you consider how much this thing has grown and now the number of listeners that we got, it really makes you feel good. And I think it's another indication of just what is happening in the UK in terms of, you know, fandom for the National Football League.
Yeah, and a big week again for NFL. We have the Los Angeles Rams and the New York Giants at Twickenham. I almost said Wembley Stadium. It's Twickenham this weekend, and it's the first time at Twickenham, the home of English rugby, to have another NFL game followed by Washington Redskins and the Cincinnati Bengals the following week. It's going to be great. I've got a fan rally that I'm hosting on Saturday, Jeff. I've got Kevin Green is going to be there, Orlando Pace. I've been watching some videos on Kevin Green. He's already my favorite. I haven't even met the fella.
Well, watch big Orlando Pace. You want to see a guy that can play tackle. Man, oh man, oh man, was he a good player.
Oh, he was. So we are looking ahead to that. The Rams are already in London. I'm going to be out of their practice tomorrow. Giants on Friday. The Giants getting late. But yeah, it's all getting going again here in the UK. Jeff, I want to talk to you. Well, you are perfectly poised to tackle the big talking point of the weekend for me. So I kind of went off on one in the studios on Sunday night after the Seattle Seahawks outlasted the Atlanta Falcons in what was a great game. And Julio Jones, I think there's pass interference on Richard Sherman on the last play of the game. I think otherwise Julio catches that ball and the Falcons might be in field goal range. First of all, I've got nothing against the Seahawks, and I thought Russell Wilson was brilliant down the stretch to lead them to a field goal to win the game. The Seahawks are actually my pick for the Super Bowl this year, so I should have wanted them to win. But the point I made in the studio afterwards was about pass interference not being reviewable, and I know it is in the Canadian Football League this year. So first of all, your take on the play and the fact it's not reviewable in the NFL, and then let's get into how it's affected games in the CFL.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. This is a lightning rod topic, because you look at that play in particular, and I watched it over and over again, and not only is Sherman early, he has Julio's arm pinned, and he has to try and one-hand the ball.
Yep.
Now, obviously, if it is difficult, and I will give the officials this, it is difficult with the size and speed of these guys today to be able to officiate the game. It's hard. And so the opportunity to get it right by using replay, I think, is really, really a way that the NFL has to go, because you're talking about, you know, you're talking about a game-changing play. And yeah, I will also say this, and I know this for a fact because we have review on a number of different things here in the Canadian Football League that the NFL can't review, and had a situation come up this past weekend where we had a video review of a fumble that they ruled an incompletion, and then came back later, 2 days later, and said, oh, sorry, it really was a fumble, you know, because they got so much media attention, the thing got played over and over and over again. And, you know, it doesn't guarantee it's going to get done right, but it gives you the best chance to get it right. And if you're a Falcon fan, and certainly if you're Dan Quinn, and he was really hot about the lack of the call, then I think, you know, you got to take a look at this. And it does slow the game down. I'm going to tell you that. That's true. Challenges, you know, do slow the game down. But do you want a little bit slower game and better officiating, or do you want a faster game? And to me, I think you got to go this direction.
Yeah, we talk so much on different levels, Jeff, about the amount of time and effort that players and coaches put into the game, and you want, and I know the officials put that time in as well, but this is not to deter from them, this is to help them. And my one thing which I can't quite get my head around, actually, is that whenever I raise this argument, a lot of people come back and you see stuff written, counter arguments You can't review a judgment call. But isn't everything that an official does on the field a judgment call to a degree? There are the rules that define something. So you must have 2 feet in the end zone. But an official is using his judgment to say whether those 2 feet were in or out. Everything is a judgment call in some way. Whether the ball breaks the plane of the goal line, you know, the official making that first initial decision is his judgment. Anything on the field is a judgment call. And anything that can be helped, I think, has to be done. And in pass interference is one. Now, you could say, OK, well, you can't have offensive holding. It's hard to have a single camera on every. But pass interference is one of those that you think would be relatively easy to offer up video evidence for.
Yeah, and it is. And if they had gone back and they had the ability to challenge that call, and I'm sure Dan Quinn would have challenged it, and go back and look at it frame by frame as you, from all the different camera angles that are available, there's no question that that was a pass interference. And you know, you want the best result, the most honest result that the game can bring. And I think video replay is part of getting the game as clean as we can get the game. I've sometimes been accused of being a traditionalist, but I in this regard, I just really think that whatever we can do, these guys work so hard. They put so much into it. There's so much preparation that goes on. To have a game decided by, or have a play that can be such a critical play in a game decided, you know, by judgment, by human judgment, is really, I think, makes it, you know, it doesn't do the game justice. And I'm for the game. Mm. And, you know, again, I think video replay is going to come. I think there's no question about it. I think, you know, the fact that the NFL is up here right now, basically checking out how we do it and what the processes are and how it's been. And you know, it has changed games up here. No question it's changed games up here. We've had a number of games gone, you know, right down to the wire, which they typically do in a CFL. Mm-hmm. And video replay has played a huge part in it. In our game this past weekend, we're playing for a playoff spot. We lose 30-29, and that they kick a field goal with 2 minutes left to go at the end of that play, which had, you know, was even though it was under video review, they still screwed it up. But you know, that at least gives you the best chance, you know. And I think that that's all we ask for as players and coaches.
Jeff, I guess in terms of slowing it up at an NFL level, it would only slow the game up inside those last 2 minutes of each half, because you would probably only have the same number of challenge flags that you can throw. So it's when it becomes automatically reviewable, that's when it would slow things up, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I think what we've kind of grown through that. We initially had a free challenge where, you know, you if you didn't get the challenge, then you didn't lose a timeout. And then on your second challenge, you lost a timeout if you were unsuccessful in the challenge. They actually went halfway through the season, did away with that because it was slowing the game down too much. And coaches were just, you know, challenging everything. And so when you get down to that situation where you have one challenge and if you don't get it, you lose a timeout, you know, you have to be judicious with those challenges because you want your timeout. So again, it's a process. It's something that I'm sure the NFL will work through during this offseason, because these plays will just keep getting repeated and repeated and repeated. And you know, again, the league wants the best for the game, and I think this is part of making the game better.
Jeff, this is purely hypothetical, but in the Premier League, you watch fouls that are given on the halfway line that aren't given in the penalty box. Is that flag thrown in the first quarter?
You know, I don't know, Neil. There's a lot of talk about that, about, you know, when it gets down to the critical moments that you let them play. And, and I think that you don't want the officials to be the game. You want the game to be the game.
Yeah.
But, again, in that scenario, that one was really just it's hard to say blatant, but that was really, in my mind, it was a no-brainer because he was on him early, and then he did pin his arm down. Mm. And, you know, so, again, it wasn't one of those bang-bang plays. It was, you know, two guys running, Sherman's on his back early, and then pins his arm. And, you know, both of those things are, you know, enough to, you know, call pass interference.
A couple of other things from this game, Jeff, and as you know, We're not going to get into every game, but we get into big talking points. A couple of things that caught my eye from this game. I think the Falcons showed that we should take them very seriously indeed. The way they came back in the second half showed some mental toughness as well as all the physical skills they've got. And what about Richard Sherman, Jeff? And I thought this spoke volumes to what Pete Carroll has done to this team. Richard Sherman was furious. You can talk about the blown coverage. Looked like Sherman thought they were going to be, what is their cover three that they play a lot. Looked like that was a blown coverage there with either Sherman or Kelce McRae. It resulted in a Julio Jones touchdown. Sherman was beside himself with anger. He got into it with Cam Chancellor, who was on the sideline, who was not playing in the game. And then a minute or two later, Michael Bennett's around him, Chancellor, Earl Thomas, the entire defense circled Richard Sherman, and they're bouncing up and down and chanting to try and get him to do it. And he's kind of sulking for the first minute, and then eventually he bounces along with them. And I thought they brought him back into the fold when he was lost and angry, and that showed great team spirit on the behalf of the Seahawks.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's an interesting mix, that Seahawk defense. That's a bunch of guys. The core of that defense has been together for a long time, and they're extremely close. And, you know, when we had the Seahawks for the Super Bowl, you could sense that. And talking to Michael Bennett, you know, he'll tell you how tight he is with his teammates. And Pete has done a great job of the Seattle organization has done a great job of keeping those guys together, which is hard to do in this age of free agency. Mm. But then additionally, you know, the culture, Pete is always talking about building the culture that he wants, which is guys caring about each other, guys, you know, competing hard against one another, but being, you know, being together. And, and you saw evidence of that when, like you said, when Sherman started to unravel, his teammates got him back and you know, got him focused, and, you know, and they end up winning the football game.
Jeff, we don't have a telestrator here, but can you talk a little bit about the what Seattle do coverage-wise? Because I remember a game last year where we had, I think it was the Panthers game, and Cam Chancellor got out. It was either some breakdown again between that strong safety and one of the cornerbacks, and it looked like Cam Chancellor had been beaten for the touchdown, and then, you know, he was kind of drawing back and forth with somebody else. Earl Thomas was throwing his hands up in the air. I've seen this before with Seattle. Can you talk a little bit about what they try and do there and how there obviously have been some breakdowns in the past? Obviously, only a few because they've earned the Legion of Boom nickname for a reason, but there have been breakdowns.
Well, they play, the base of their defense is cover three. And without the telestrator trying to do this, sure, you know, over the radio, it's a little difficult. But it basically three deep players. There's a safety that's deep, and then two of the corners are deep. Now, where that can be risky is teams that will try and get multiple vertical routes on you. So, for example, they'll try and put four receivers up the field on three defenders.
Yeah.
So somebody in the under coverage, typically one of the safeties, has to carry that fourth vertical route and help out the high players. And if you miss the carry or you miss the read to carry, then that high player can get exposed because it's like fast break basketball. It's a 2-on-1 or, you know, a breakaway in hockey. And it's very, very difficult on this field with the kind of athletes that there are and the kind of quarterbacks that are throwing the ball to be able to really in the old school way, we used to say you can midpoint the zone and you can be between the two verticals and react to the quarterback. Well, that's very, very difficult to do with the way these guys can sling the ball now. So it relies on that carry principle, and if a guy breaks down, it can be a big, big play. So, you know, again, when you see it, that's where you can. That's the first place to look.
Let's have a look at some of the other things around the NFL. It was a week of comebacks, Jeff. I mean, the Jacksonville Jaguars were down by 10 to Chicago. Then they were down 16-7 in the fourth quarter. They win 17-16. Indianapolis led 23-9 with 7 minutes left and find a way to lose in overtime to Houston. Carolina were down by 21 to the Saints. Then they come all the way back to 38 apiece and lose on a late kick. The Giants have a come-from-behind win. It was the same with New England, who stormed away in the second half. Detroit had a come-from-behind win over the Los Angeles Rams. I mean, this was a wild one. This weekend was a wild weekend.
Yeah, and I think that's indicative of the way the game's being played now in the league. You know, it's interesting. There are still some teams that run the football. Dallas runs the ball extremely well. But everybody in the league now has the ability to be explosive. There are very few offenses that are struggling, you know, to put points on the board or to make big plays. And I think this is now the time of the season where we're, you know, you're into the midpoint of the year where offenses are starting to catch, you know, kind of get their feet up underneath them and really recognize what they are. I thought the Giants did the best job I've seen the Giants do of taking advantage of the skill that they have on the field. They moved Beckham around and got him into situations where he could make plays, not only at, you know, on a long catch like the 75-yarder that he had, but the little one-yarder that he turned into a touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, he is dynamic. He is dynamic with the ball in his hand. You just got to get it in his hands enough that he can make plays because – you know, it's like playing Russian roulette when you're a defensive coordinator and he's got the ball in his hands. Pretty soon, one of those bullets is going to come out.
Well, the defensive back fell down, didn't he, Jeff? They created some confusion on the outside, and you know those rub routes that we talk about, and Odell comes across the middle and away he goes. And that was the Odell Beckham you wanted to see, and then all the other stuff, which is still ridiculous. And he's now talking about marrying the kicking net, which is going to get him random drug tested soon. All of that ridiculousness becomes a footnote when you have 222 yards receiving and two touchdowns.
Yeah, that's the guy that I wanted to see. Now, you know, Ben McAdoo and the offensive staff, and they have a part in that too. They've got to find ways to create ways to get him the football in space and let him become that guy. And I think Eli has to share a little bit of the responsibility there too, because, you know, great quarterbacks know who their guy is, and they find a way to get that guy the ball, particularly in crucial situations. And that's what I saw Eli do on the weekend. So I thought it was a great game by the Giants. I thought that's, again, I am certainly not an Odell Beckham hater. I love the kid. Yeah. I love what his talent can do. I love to see him play, and I'm glad to see him play the way that he's capable of playing. Now, you know, you've shown that you can be that guy, be that guy every week. I got to let that other stuff go because the thing with the kicking net, I don't quite get.
When he got that second touchdown, Jeff, we were sat in the studio and he crossed the goal line, and the producer said in my ear, "And literally anything could happen right now." And he wasn't joking. I mean, and off came the helmet and the penalty flags were flying and he goes to the kick in there where there is now an army of photographers and video guys every week. We've got to move on from that. That's his shtick at the moment. Let's flip it the other side then, because Carolina dropped to 1-5 and this was a disappointment. This might have been worse than some of the big losses, Jeff, where they were not close because they fought all the way back and then defense imploded again. But let's talk about Cam, because, you know, obviously we talk, you can bring things from a coaching point of view. I see it from the media side of things, of course. This is now twice after a disappointing loss. You know, once it becomes more than once, it's not quite a trend, but, you know, it's something that's happened again. Cam had a really, really surly post-game press conference. I'm not expecting him to be all hearts and flowers. But there was a couple of times, the issue I had, Jeff, was he was asked a question about the defense and he wouldn't even answer it. It was, and when you don't do that, it comes across as like, well, that was just their fault. It wasn't on me. And I don't know, it was just a bad, bad look again for Cam. I'm not expecting him to be happy and joyful, but you're the quarterback. You've got to be there. That's one of your responsibilities.
Yeah, no question. You are the face of the franchise. And you are the face of your football team, and you know that comes with a certain amount of responsibility. And you know, again, he is an intense competitor. I will give him that, and he wants to win, and he wants to, you know, he wants to be the face. He wants to, you know, be one of the greats in the game. The challenge becomes that when he doesn't perform at the level that he thinks he should, or the team doesn't perform at the level he thinks they should, he can get into these moods, and it's not good for him. It's not good for the Panthers. You know, and here's, you know, the reality of it, of the media, Neil. If you know, if they feel like they've got a little soft spot, they're gonna continue to dig in there. And again, it would really serve him well to kind of listen to how some of the other guys, the, you know, the Aaron Rodgers and the Tom Brady's and those guys handle the media, because I listened to an interview Monday night with Tom Brady. He does a little shtick on the radio every Monday night for the Monday night game, and they tried to push him a little bit into some of those kinds of topics, mm-hmm. and he just would not bite. And again, I think that's part of the growth process, and he's come a million miles from when. And you illustrated to the viewers, I think, last year about the amount of media training he's had mm-hmm. since he's been in Carolina. But he's still got a ways to go.
Yeah, they will try and get him, Jeff, as well, because I listened to the press conference and he answers, he almost goes Marshawn Lynch at one point. He just says to a couple of questions, he goes, "I'm just doing what the coaches are asking me to do." Then somebody asks another question. He goes, "I'm just doing what the coaches are asking me to do." He did that about three times. So then the next question was about, what about that interception you threw? And he had to change his answer because obviously he can't say, "I was just doing what the coaches asked me to do." So they will try and trip him up. And when it was more the question, I don't think it's necessarily, I expect him to come out and look miserable. I've been in press conferences. I remember going to a Philadelphia press conference where the Eagles had lost at home to the Dallas Cowboys. You know how much that hurts the Eagles. And I could barely hear Andy Reid. Andy Reid was miserable. He was foul. He was in a terrible mood. But he stayed there and he answered every question. I think when you say next question, when it's about your defense, or there was one where Greg Olsen said, one of the questions was something like, "Greg Olsen said the offense didn't do this." And he just was like, "Well, that's what Olsen says." And it's, I don't know, just, you are going to get difficult questions. If you've lost a game, you're going to get difficult questions. You just got to try and deal with it. It doesn't ultimately. Yep. It doesn't matter in terms of the wins and losses, but if you want to be paid like a franchise quarterback, one of the deals of a franchise quarterback is being the face of the franchise. And to me, it's a couple of times now in big stages that's happened.
Yeah, and like you say, Neil, that comes with the territory. If there's certain responsibilities that you have in every job and at every level of every job, and when you are the guy and you are the franchise quarterback, when it's not going well, you're going to get the hard questions, just like the head coach does. And so, the ability to handle those moments is really, really important. And, there have been some moments that head coaches haven't handled them particularly well. And, we saw the thing early in the year with Foxy where he got a little, got on a media reporter because of, he didn't think the question was a valid question.
They get some stupid questions, Jeff. There's no doubt they get some stupid questions, but.
but that's, again, what part of what you're paid to do is to take those. I think there's a way you can handle it without lashing out or making the person ask the question feel like there's, belittle him in some way. Mm-hmm. And I think that's an important way to handle it. Watch Belichick handle him. I mean, you can tell by his tone that he thinks that he might question that, whether that guy's got enough, mental capacity to open the door. But he's not, he also understands he has a responsibility to answer the question.
Jeff, if you are going to use Bill Belichick as the training video for media training for NFL coaches and players, I'm retiring right now. That's me done. I'm out.
No, I didn't. I didn't say that he was the model. I just said even he,
yes,
who has very little patience, and I think really, really questions whether the media even watches the game sometimes.
Yeah.
Because he has such a vast football knowledge that that being in that press conference in some cases is the last place he wants to be. Although I've been around him, and I know you have too, where I think he actually really enjoys, if you catch him at the right time, I think he really enjoys kind of, taking a mickey out of the media.
Oh, he does. He does. And he loves, if you want to get an answer on Bill Belichick, you don't ask him anything about your team, his team right now, because he doesn't want to give anything away. You ask him about the history of the NFL, or you ask him about pure X's and O's and you try and learn, then you might get something out of him. Jeff, what about the, let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys then, because we thought that this would be, you actually picked them to win at Lambeau Field, so well done to you. But if they were going to win, I thought it was going to be a low score, or not a low scoring, but a tight game. They were never in doubt of winning that game. They were never in question. It was controlled from start to finish. So let's actually talk about Dak or Tony Romo? Because it is, you must be hearing it all the time in the States and in North America. It's probably all over the radio stations, because Tony Romo can return. They're on a bye now, but Tony could be back October 30th, or more likely November the 6th, which is week 9, and they play at Cleveland, which would be a nice return for Tony Romo. But do you upset the apple cart? What do you do? How do you go about it? Jerry Jones has been a huge Tony Romo fan. I mean, it's one of those good problems to have, but it is a thing that's going to be needed to be negotiated by the Cowboys in the coming weeks.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've heard Jerry Jones be as definite as the second that Tony Romo is ready to play, he will become the starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. Mm-hmm. We're dealing with, you're not dealing with a normal kind of guy on this issue, right? First of all, I think he loves the controversy. Absolutely loves that, because they're talking about the Cowboys and they're talking about him. So from that standpoint, I think he kind of is enjoying all this. Now, from the other standpoint, the you know, what's best for his football team, there's kind of really mixed feelings. You know, I've heard Stephen A. Smith, who's very outspoken, and I says that, you know, he called Tony Romo Tony Jones because he's Jerry Jones's adopted son, and he'll be the quarterback as soon as he gets back. Then I've heard a number of, you know, football people say, that's not the way that's not what they would do. Even Jimmy Johnson the other day said, you got to ride with the hot hand. And now the good thing is that you'll have a veteran that can come in if the young kid's not doing well. That's more of how I look at it, because of the fact that they are playing so well. Yeah. It's not like they're, you know, just relying on the defense and their running game. They are playing outstanding football. That kid is protecting the ball. He's getting the ball to the open guy. I thought late in the game when they were coming after him with pressure on almost every third down, trying to get a plus one situation, and he knew where his hots were. He knew where to go with the ball quickly. He got it out of his hands. He's accurate. So he's playing at a really, really high level for a rookie, for any quarterback, but particularly for a rookie. And that running back, you know, Ezekiel Elliott, I mean, he's leading the National Football League in rushing right now, has a chance to, you know, have, I think, as good a rookie year as any NFL running back's ever had. So right now I'd say I would not upset the apple cart. I would not change the direction. I would not change the flow of that offense. I understand. The only thing that, and I took a couple questions on Twitter about this yesterday, and the only thing I said I can't, the only thing I can't answer to is what's the mood of the locker room. You know, that's what Jason Garrett and Jerry Jones have got. That's their responsibility to know, and
Jeff,
that's what they should know.
That's a good point. No, that's a good point about the locker room, and it's a point I raised on Sky on Sunday night, though. If you think about it, you know how much turnover there is in an NFL team from year to year. Basically, anyone who's played on the Cowboys team for the last year and a half, so all of last year and all of this season, they've not experienced the Tony Romo magic firsthand.
That is a great point, because, you know, you can say that this is Tony Romo's team, and, you know, maybe by reputation it's his team. But if you look at it, how much has he played in the last 2 years? Mm. And, you know, this is a different Cowboys team than the 2014 team, or that went to the playoffs, or, you know, before that when Tony was, you know, making plays. So, you know, yeah, sure, Jason Witten and he are very close friends, and, you know, again, but how many of these guys really even know much about Tony Romo as a quarterback? They know him as a guy in the room. They know him as a guy in training camp, but he's been hurt so doggone much, it's tough to say, really know just how much he really does have an influence in that locker room.
Jeff, a couple of weeks ago, I was firmly of the belief that Romo would be back, because you could argue that they could do more with Romo. They haven't asked Prescott to stretch the field the same way. They've tried to bring him along slowly. They are giving him more and more each week. And you read reports out of Dallas, and they're putting more on his plate each week. But then I thought, and I'm seeing it more, when he goes to Lambeau Field and they win comfortably, and however you're playing, even if you're not stretching the fit, they clearly don't need to change what's happening right now. Tony Romo, maybe from a technical point of view, gives you a little bit more in terms of being able to go downfield. But why would you change what you've got with Dak? I think I've changed my mind on this. And the other thing I think, Jeff, which is quite interesting, which you just see it from a layman's point of view from through my eyes, yeah, Tony Romo does a lot of running around behind that offensive line, and yet Dak Prescott looks like he can stand on the spot and just throw the ball around. I mean, it's how can they? And it's the same offensive line. I mean, it just they just look different. I'm beginning to move into the camp where you don't make the change.
Well, I think part of it is, you know, Romo is a guy that wants the big play. He wants to extend the play. He right. wants to have the opportunity to get the ball up the field. And sometimes you got to move around to do that. Mm-hmm. Prescott obviously has been extremely well coached on protecting the football. And again, knowing where your hots are, knowing where to go with the ball, knowing, you know, how many seconds you're going to have in your, you know, that what we talk all the time about the mental clock in your head. And, you know, that I think, plus the fact that they've been able to run the ball extremely well. You look at the other thing that you got to remember with this Prescott kid is Dallas's big play guy, their marquee guy, has been out an awful lot.
It's even more impressive.
Yeah. So again, and I'm a Cole Beasley guy, but you know, you look at that group of receivers, and you know, he's it's not like he's got this tremendous cast of receivers around him. Their biggest play guy hasn't been there. Right. And so, you know, he targets Beasley 6 times. He targets Witten 8 times. That's your slot and your tight end. And, you know, there's an old saying in the National Football League, a quarterback's best friend is tight end. Mm-hmm. Because, why? Because those are the intermediate and short routes. And the same thing with your slot. Cole is so fast in the slot, so quick in the slot. He's so tough to man in the slot that – that's where you can go with the ball quickly. And a lot of those catches that he made, he only averaged 9.7 yards a catch, but a lot of those catches that he made were those kinds of plays where he knew that he could get the ball out, intermediate throw, safe throw, and then, you know, see what he can do with it in his hands after the catch. So I think he's playing extremely high level, extremely high level. And it's not like now there isn't tape. You know, the defensive coordinators, he's kind of snuck up on everybody. There's plenty of tape on him now.
Right.
And, you know, again, that's why I say, and this is, you know, again, goes completely against the old coaching saw that you can't lose your job due to injury. Well, the reality of it is better's better. And if you're playing better with this guy, then in my opinion, you stay with this guy.
Yeah, there are no rules on that. It's all about winning the game. Just interestingly, Jeff, you talked a little bit earlier about teams running the football. Obviously, Dallas are doing that week in and week out with Ezekiel Elliott. Washington had 230 yards rushing this past weekend. Buffalo had 312 against San Francisco. And Johnny Giant.
How about our guy, Jay Ajayi?
There you go. 204 yards and 2 touchdowns.
The guy goes from, you know, kind of, I guess, in the doghouse a little bit earlier in the year.
Yeah.
But, man, he's the first back all year to rush for 200 yards. And I'm telling you what, he looked dynamic.
Yeah, he's fast, he's powerful. I mean, that looked like a complete package, Jeff, and not just the long run at the end. I mean, he was dominating the Steelers throughout the night. I mean, we haven't even talked about Big Ben. This could be a potentially big injury because torn meniscus, they seem to think it's... With this meniscus, Jeff, that's like a... can be a short-term thing, or Adrian Peterson's out for a long time with it.
Yeah, it's kind of a dicey thing because, you know, when you say torn meniscus... it could be just a flap of the meniscus is torn, and they can go in and either repair it or just cut a little bit of it off. When they have to take the whole thing out, that's a whole other issue. So, you know, again, torn meniscus is just kind of a generic term for an injury. So, again, when they say he's out for a week, then it's probably either a pinch or a little flap that needs to be taken off. Regardless, if you're a Steeler fan, this is not good because you look at they win at about a 70% rate when he's the quarterback, and when he's not the quarterback, it drops way, way off. So, again, for the Steelers, this is certainly not not a good situation to have.
No, and here's another not good situation for the Steelers to have, Jeff. They've played on the road twice this year. They lost 34-3 to Philadelphia and now 30-15 to Miami.
Yeah, and you know what? And it shouldn't be that way because their defense, you know, I thought had really made some improvements in the offseason. And, you know, I really like that young group of linebackers that they got. But, boy, I tell you what, Miami, and, you know, Miami's not been known for having a great offensive line that can, you know, pound away at you. They just went after the Steelers.
Mm. Jeff, any other business from NFL Week 6 that caught your eye?
Well, as you look at, I'm just really, really am happy for the Jaguars because that kind of win shows resiliency, and it's what a number of the players said, you know, earlier on in the year. You know, we just have to show we can win now. You know, well, I know it's the Bears, but you come back, and anytime you can come back in the National Football League and win a football game, that's a big step and a big step for that organization. I also thought, you know, doggone it, if Indianapolis's Achilles heel didn't come up and bite them again. They just are struggling to protect that quarterback.
Yeah, they went for it on 4th and inches once, didn't they? And Luck got hit, and obviously they had a chance to kick a field goal and didn't. They went for it, and more pressure on Andrew. Jeff, the Jags, though, this is one worry that's got to be on Gus Bradley's plate, is another slow start. They are notoriously slow starters. I mean, I think I saw a stat last week. Blake Bortles has thrown something like 4 first-quarter touchdowns his entire career or something like that. I mean, how do you get around that? Do you make sure you give them a good pre-game speech, or do you pick 10 plays that you know your quarterback's comfortable with? So is it a physical thing or a mental thing?
Well, I think it's more often than not, it's a physical thing, mm-hmm. not a mental thing. And again, you know, I've really come to learn over 20-some years in pro football that those pregame speeches, they last about as long as it takes to walk out the locker room onto the field. So
you don't write them up for too long.
It's what you do in your preparation typically that dictates how you perform early in the game. And so I'm sure what's happening now is because this has now become an issue and you're constantly working to eliminate problems that you have or challenges that you have. Well, slow starts are a challenge. Again, they will go back and they will look at everything that they're doing in preparation, you know, what their openers are, how they practice their openers, yada, yada, all through that to try and stimulate that offense early in the game because it is a problem and you don't want to play from behind. You want to have an opportunity to jump on top and you know, get some momentum and, you know, start to play positive football early in the game. And, you know, if you're going to be a championship team, and that's way early to talk like that with the Jaguars, but if they're going to continue to move in that direction, then, you know, playing well out of the gate is really important.
Jeff, NFL history is littered with intimidating defenders who sometimes stretch the rules, but you just can't be that way in today's NFL. And Vontaze Burfict is hurting his team. He's already coming off a 3-game suspension to start the year. He goes low at the knees of Martellus Bennett. The NFL are going to look at that. And now I saw another video this morning after LeGarrette Blount's touchdown run where he appears to stamp on the back of his leg. I mean, this kind of stuff is not going to be tolerated in the NFL.
No, and it was really interesting. That was one of the tough questions that they asked Brady last night on his radio interview. And they said, did you guys score that last touchdown as a way to kind of rub it in and answer to Burfict's hit on Martellus and you know, and the stomp? And he, you know, Tom wasn't going to go there. You know, I mean, he just said, no, you know, obviously it's we've still got a lot to work on, so it gives us an opportunity to work in a goal line situation. And, you know, but I think, you know, this is where the guys like this, we talked about Vontaze a number of times. He's a great football player. But at some point, if you can't control your emotions, if you can't control yourself, and you take 15-yard penalties and you get suspended, and you're doing things that not only hurt you financially because you lose money when you're suspended or you're paying fines, you're hurting your football team, and that's the bottom line.
Jeff, one more thing. I woke up to some heartbreaking news on Sunday morning. Getting my breakfast, and my son George, who obviously follows all the NFL stuff on Facebook, said, Dad, who was Dennis Byrd? And I was like, why? please don't tell me anything bad, because I love Dennis Byrd and the story of him. If you don't know Dennis Byrd, he was a defensive end for the New York Jets. Was paralyzed in a game in 1992 and took a year to basically get back to full health. They said he'd never walk again. His life was in danger. And he did walk again. He went through this incredible comeback. His book, Rise and Walk, is the best football book I've ever read. The most inspirational man. And he died age 50 on Saturday night in a car crash. Just heartbreaking news.
Yeah, you know, it is. And I, it's you know, ironic that you said Rise and Walk again, because I read that book and, you know, it is a fabulous book. If you're one of the listeners out there and want to read a great inspirational book, not just about football, but about life and about the ability to overcome adversity and, you know, handle things in a positive way, it is a phenomenal book. And, you know, sadly, in back home in Oklahoma, you know, I guess a couple young kids veered across the center line and hit him and took his life, and really, really a sad moment. And the Jets honored him last night by you know, having his number, a little decal of his number on their helmet. And you know, it's sad when a guy that's battled through so much in his life, you know, has his life tragically taken at such a young age, 50 years old.
That was Dennis Byrd, who died age 50 last weekend. All right, that was week 6 in the NFL. Next, we will make our picks for week 7.
Think you're the best at fantasy football? Don't wait till the end of the season to find out. Put your fantasy football knowledge to the test and win big every week at DraftKings.co.uk. DraftKings is the destination for one-week fantasy football. At DraftKings, you can play whenever you want, against who you like, in a variety of contests. Playing is easy. Just choose your contest, create your lineup, and follow your team live. Hurry to DraftKings.co.uk/NFL and play for free. That's DraftKings.co.uk/NFL. Play free for a shot at winning amazing prizes, including a trip to the Super Bowl, a jersey of your choice, DraftKings merchandise, and much more. Only at DraftKings.co.uk/NFL.
All right, let's make our picks for week 7 then. And Jeff, I was very kind to you because you asked me to change you wanted to pick the Saints originally, and then you asked to pick Carolina if Cam Newton was starting. So I obliged and I changed your pick. So you got that one wrong.
Yeah, well, you know what? Sometimes you overthink it. That's what I'm saying, coaching. Don't overthink the process. And I overthought that one. So that's what I get.
But I am going to tell you, for about the 6th week in a row, you won, Jeff. You went 11-4. I went 10-5. The big difference is you went the Chiefs, I went the Raiders. You went Houston, and I went Indianapolis. So you got the win again, my friend.
Well, I'm gonna tell you something. That picking, anytime you're a Raider guy, and you know, I gotta say I'm a Raider guy, and you pick the Chiefs over the Raiders, that's almost heresy. So please keep that one on the down low. I don't want Raider Nation to know that I picked against us, but. That is a huge rival game, and you know, boy, I tell you what, I thought Kansas City really played well in that game.
They did. What about Dontari Poe? Big man with football. Jeff, I got some positive feedback to my old Raiders impression. It went down well on the social media side of things.
See, there you go, man. I'm telling you, there's a spot for you in Raider Nation.
Excellent. Let's get going with our picks then, starting on Thursday night. The Chicago Bears at the Green Bay Packers. Brian Hoyer continues to put up big numbers for the Bears. Green Bay, there's something wrong with Aaron Rodgers. It's time to sort of mention that it might be Aaron Rodgers, not just everyone around him as well.
Well, I'm going to still take the Packers, because yeah, I think in Green Bay this will be a bounce back opportunity for the Pack.
I'm going to go Green Bay as well. The Giants at the LA Rams in London, 2:30 kickoff, Twickenham. I'm going to say, this is a tough one, because the Rams have woken up a little bit on offense, Jeff.
Yeah, you know, but what is the Rams? I mean, all of a sudden, they went from playing great defense to not being able to stop anybody. I mean, Matt Stafford lit them up. Mm. And then you look at the stats of their last game, and Case Keenum's throwing for over 300 yards, and Todd Gurley rushes for 40. I mean, What are they? What's going on with the Rams? They are the hardest team in the NFL for me to pick. I'm telling you, because you never know what's going to show up with that bunch.
No.
So I'm going to take the Giants.
I'm going to take the Giants as well. And I said on Sky on Sunday night, isn't it kind of ironic that as the Rams have finally discovered their offense, their defense has gone backwards.
Absolutely. And like I said, I mean, Matt Stafford's a very, very good quarterback. But, you know, he just ripped them. I mean, ripped them. And, you know, they got Zach Zenner playing tailback for them. And, you know, you look at it and you say, they're not good enough to beat a good Ram defense. And when the Rams play defense, they can really play defense. But, boy, they did not show up against the Lions.
All right, the New Orleans Saints at the Kansas City Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are going to play keep away. I think they've got enough offense to really test what is still a very poor Saints defense. Who do you like in this one? I'm going Chiefs.
I take Kansas City.
All right, Indianapolis at Tennessee. So, Jeff, I'm going to pick Tennessee to win at home because I've lost a little bit of faith in the people around Andrew Luck, in particular the offensive line that we talk about time and time again. And Tennessee have a pretty good defense, so I'm going Titans.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a heck of a football game. And I think it's going to come down to whether Marcus Mariota can protect the ball. And, you know, he's thrown a few too many interceptions for me. But I like Tennessee at home in this one.
All right, both going Titans in that one. Minnesota at Philadelphia. Who do you like in this one? Vikings coming off a bye. Eagles have lost two in a row.
I'm going to take Minnesota because I think Minnesota defensively is a good football team. You know, I think the Eagles are kind of coming to be what they will be. You know, they got off that really hot start. But, you know, young quarterback's still playing well. But I think Minnesota with a week to rest and an extra preparation time.
Good stuff. Both going Minnesota. We'll fly through a couple of these, Jeff, because I know you've got to get off to your – you're right in the middle of your season. We want to get a couple of questions in the mailbag. Cleveland at Cincinnati. So Bengals have struggled in recent weeks, but they did play New England hard early on. I'm going to go Cincinnati.
Cincy.
All right, both going to Cincinnati. Washington at Detroit. So the Redskins got something rolling now. They've got four wins in a row. Detroit, they play pretty tough at home, though. Detroit are tough to beat at home. I'm going to go Lions in this one.
No, I'm going to take the Redskins.
All right, so you're going Washington. Oakland at Jacksonville. So tough trip across the country for the Raiders, but they've done it three times this year already. They've won all three times. Who do you like in this one?
The Raiders.
And I'm going to say what you said. I'm going Raiders. I'm not giving it to them again. If you overdo it, you know, I don't want to overcook it. So I might bring it back out for the playoffs. But I'm going I'm going the Raiders. Buffalo at Miami. This is our first game on Sky Sports. I think Buffalo are going to be physical with the Dolphins. Their defense seems to be back, Jeff. It looks like a top five defense again. Who do you like in this one?
I'm going to take Buffalo again.
Yeah, Buffalo for me as well. Baltimore at the New York Jets. So we saw Geno Smith ride to the rescue last night with a fumble and an interception. So Geno's still being Geno. Todd Bowles says that the job is still belongs to Ryan Fitzpatrick. Jets have been such a disappointment. I've got to go Baltimore.
Yeah, I'm going Baltimore because I saw signs of life in Baltimore's offense this past week under new coordinator Marty Morningwig, so I'm going to take Baltimore.
Jeff, all six of Baltimore's games have been decided by one score. So you are going to be 3-3 if you win those kind of games every week.
Yeah, exactly.
Tampa Bay at San Francisco. Oh, well, get whoever's running back for Tampa Bay, get them in your fantasy team. I'm going Tampa Bay.
I like that one too.
All right. It was just different with Colin Kaepernick at quarterback. It wasn't better for the 49ers. San Diego at Atlanta. You've got to love what Philip Rivers tries to do for this Chargers team week in and week out. But I like the Falcons at home.
I'm with you.
Atlanta, we're both going there. New England at Pittsburgh. It's in Pittsburgh, but I think Ben's probably going to miss this one. So it's Landry Jones. I've got to go New England.
I'm 100%. If Landry Jones is playing, it's New England.
All right, both in New England. Good Sunday night game now because Arizona have bounced back, Jeff. They got two wins in a row. Seattle or Arizona, who do you like?
I'm going to take Seattle.
You're going to Seattle. I am going to go Seattle as well. And Houston at Denver to finish off on Monday Night Football. Brock Osweiler returns to the Broncos. It doesn't matter. It's Denver who win.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. Trevor Siemian throwing the ball way too many times.
Yes.
Right?
Yes,
do you see how many times he threw the ball? I think 50 times in the game. That's not a recipe for success in Denver. So, you know, I think they'll get back to running the pounding it a little bit at Houston, and I think they'll bounce back.
All right, so both going Denver there. Let's take a couple of quick questions in the mailbag. Let's have a look here. Let's have a see. Here's one for Michael O'Donnell. Says, if you could choose one wide receiver for your team, who would it be? It's a difficult one because you got the big-bodied Julio Jones. You've got Odell Beckham, who's dynamic. You've got Antonio Brown, who's somewhere in between. Jeff, I'm probably taking Antonio Brown because I think he's got that all-round game. You know, he can stretch the field. He can get deep, but he's really, really shifty. And, you know, if you desperately need it, it'll give you something on special teams.
Yeah, he can bring an awful lot to the table. But when I had to, you know, evaluate the receivers in the league, they gave me the top five receivers in the league, and I point scoring system. The guy that came out on top for me, and I think is you know, Julio Jones. He can do so many things. He's big. He's strong. He's long. You know, he's good after the catch. He's good in the red zone. So I think he's a very underrated receiver in the league, because it's funny, you know, you don't talk about him when you start talking about the top receivers in the league, and then you go, oh yeah, that Julio Jones, yeah, he's good, yeah, you know, but you can talk, you know, talk about Brandon Marshall, you talk about OBJ, you talk about, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, you talk about all these guys, Jordy Nelson, but Julio Jones, just look at the numbers.
Oh, he's incredible. And Jeff, I remember that I've told this story before. His vertical leap at the combine was 39 inches. He's 6'3". He's 220. He's bigger than that, surely. He looks like a tight end. But he runs a 4.3 40. The guy is a freak of nature.
Yeah, there's no question. And, you know, if he was playing in a larger media market than Atlanta, if he was in New York or Chicago or, you know, now L.A., I think people would really appreciate, you know, just how unusual his talent level is.
Here's a question from Matt Egan, Jeff, who says, the Bills snapped the ball direct to LeSean McCoy on Sunday. That resulted actually in a 12-yard touchdown run. Can you snap the ball to anyone? Must you let the defense know? My 49ers seem shocked. So you can't snap it to an offensive lineman, but you can snap it to anyone on offense, can't you, Jeff?
Yeah, anybody, receivers coming in motion, the back walking across, it is really, those are fun plays. And you know, it's interesting when you look at that Bills offense. They really have kind of opened that thing up a little bit. And there's, you know, they're kind of free flowing right now. And I think that's a, you know, that's a, you never, to me, it's always a danger sign when you're firing coordinators two games or three games into the season. But, you know, you got to give the Bills credit. It's helped them. It's, you know, created a situation where, you know, the offense obviously is more wide open. They're scoring points now. And you know, that's one of the reasons why the Bills have got on this little run they're on.
Yeah, LeSean McCoy looks like the rushing champion of 2013 that he was when he was with the Eagles. And he was doing a better job.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think those yards weren't a little bit sweeter because he was getting them against Chip?
You know it. He said that Chip ran him out of town, didn't he? And so he was loving every minute of that, every little beat of his touchdown dance. It was all to kind of rub it in Chip Kelly's face. And McCoy did a better job of taking the snap than Tyrod Taylor, because the week before, Tyrod Taylor lined up behind the guard out of the shotgun and the ball went flying straight past him. One more, Jeff. This comes from Mr. Varley, who says, just how good does John Elway look now letting Brock Osweiler walk? Elway didn't want to pay that big money that Houston paid. Although saying that, he reportedly offered $16 million, which is still a significant investment. But Elway clearly had a limit of how high he wanted to go in terms of spending that money. And to be fair, Jeff, and he was getting booed for a lot of the game, Osweiler has not looked good in Houston.
No, he hasn't. And, you know, again, that's a work in progress.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's too early to say either way on that deal. I think the one thing that I will commend John for is he stuck to his guns. He knew what he could afford. He had another guy that, you know, Von Miller, he had to get re-signed. And there's only so many cap dollars to go around, and he stuck to his guns and was not going to be intimidated, not going to be pushed, not going to let public sentiment, you know, move him. And that's what, those are the hard, tough decisions that general managers have to make.
Mm, absolutely. Jeff, we're going to let you get off to work. Do your real job.
All right, mate. I appreciate it. It's awesome talking ball with you and all our listeners. And, hey, just keep growing. The tribe keeps getting bigger. So I love it.
All right, good stuff. So this has been Inside the Huddle. We'll be back next week to break down week 7, including the big game at Twickenham between the Los Angeles Rams and the New York Giants. If you are around, we'll be on stage at the fan rally at NFL House between 11 and 5 on Saturday. And if you can't make it there, hopefully I see you at the tailgate party. I'll be on stage from 10:30 on Sunday morning. Should be a lot of fun. Always great weekends. Until next week, Jeff, say goodbye to the good folks.
Aloha.